Now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the past, we have received a heritage, our American heritage. And it consists of many things. It's an ideal and a way of life. It's everything America stands for, our heritage. We can repay the past only by using our heritage well today, by taking pride in the most complete expression of individual liberties, civil rights, and personal dignity. And by doing so, we'll be guaranteeing our future, for we have learned from history that unused freedom has a habit of slipping away. Of course, using our freedom makes certain demands upon us. But to the people of many countries today, these demands would constitute a gift beyond price. They mean voting in an informed way, serving on juries, taking an interest and having a voice in all the affairs of the community, the state, and the nation. All this preserves our heritage by exercising it. And by making our form of government work better at home, we strengthen democracy everywhere. We provide an example of free people governing themselves through a free government, a dynamic example of man's finest ideals at work. To every American, then, falls the task of protecting our heritage. For freedom is everybody's job.
Hey! Oh, are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Johnson's
self-polishing glow
coat presents Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Band and Silly Mel's Orchestra. It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctives, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life! Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
And now here is your guide, the adventure of the mind.
Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. I've mentioned quite a few unusual uses for Johnson's Wax. As a matter of fact, I've been getting some very interesting letters passing along more of these helpful suggestions, and I intend to mention them from time to time. But today, I'd like to go back for just a moment to fundamentals and talk about the real number one purpose of Johnson's Wax, the principal reason for using it. It's protection, of course. Protection for the finish of your floors, your tabletops, windowsills. Yes, and your leather goods, refrigerator, and countless other things. The wax itself takes the wear. The finish underneath is safe. That's why in times like these, it's so important to keep your floors, furniture, and woodwork regularly waxed. After all, it does save you hours of work, too. And that's important right now for all of us. And it makes your entire home gleam and glow with protected beauty.
The priceless privileges of an American citizen is the right to pop off about the government, national, state, and municipal. In this case, it's municipal. It seems that the city of Wistful Vista has failed in its duty to two of its taxpayers, namely, and to wit, Fibber McGee and Molly.
I'll blast those buzzers out of the city hall, that's what I'll blast. I'll show those baby-kissing, ballot-stuffing ward healers who swings a little power in this town. This is 3 times in 5 years they've done this to us.
Well, my goodness, dearie, it might have been just an oversight.
Oversight my clavicle. It's things like this that cause epidemics. This might start a plague that would sweep the whole state.
Look, dearie, just because they didn't collect our garbage today doesn't mean a thing. You didn't carry it out to the curb till 9:30.
What am I expected to do, make a formal appointment with them honey wagon pirates? They could check back this way and see if our garbage was out, couldn't they? We give them a nice gift every Christmas, don't we?
Of course we do. And you'd think they'd remember a dollar longer than that, too.
Well, say, suppose there was about 250,000 people in this town. Suppose everybody gives the garbage man a buck every Christmas.
Sure.
That's $250,000. A quarter of a million. Holy smoke, a quarter of a million. By George, I could drive one of them trucks as good as anybody. Hand me the phone. I'm going to call Mayor LaTrivia.
Here. But aren't you assuming a little too much?
Any guy with my influence at the city hall shouldn't have any trouble getting a job like that. All you got to do is know the right people. That's all you got to do is know.
Yeah, but dearie...
Hello, operator. Give me Mayor LaTrivia at the city hall. Up a chair and sit down, Molly. It's Mert.
You'd think a city this size would have more than one phone operator, wouldn't you?
How's every little thing, Mert? There's a... What's a, Mert? Your sister? Miss America, huh?
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Is she in Atlantic City?
No, she married a guy in England. Says she's going to Miss America. Look, Mert. Mert, will you please...
Hold it, McGee. The garbage men are picking up the garbage right now.
Okay. Skip it, Mert. Thanks anyway. That shows what influence will do, Snooky. I merely threatened to call the city hall and then monkeys start jumping like monkeys.
Sometimes I wonder why you don't go into politics, McGee.
Not enough money in it if you're honest and too much trouble if you're not. Personally, I'd just as soon be a silent figure in Wistful Vista politics. The man who knows everybody. The man who...
That's probably Westbrook Pegler wanting to know how to spell Roosevelt. Come in! Hello, Mrs. Carstairs. So nice to see you.
How do you do, my dear? Good day, Mr. McGee.
Hi, Carstairs. Sit down and build yourself a lap.
Thank you.
Take Mrs. Carstairs' coat, dearie.
Sure, sure. Shoot the sable to me, Mabel. That's a girl. Now then, what seems to be troubling you, Carstairs? What's putting all them furrows in your well-plowed brow?
I'm sorry that my agitation is so obvious, Mr. McGee, but I am perturbed.
Well, tell us all about it, Millicent, dear. If there's anything we can do, we'll be glad to.
You betcha, kid. You betcha, kid. You tell old Uncle Fibber your troubles. You owe some bookie more than your allowance will cover? Just give me his name and I'll win enough to tide you over.
Well, that isn't exactly...
You worried about putting on weight again? Don't worry about that. Remember, elephants are a lot more popular than snakes.
No, Mr. McGee,
you found a telephone number written in lipstick on your husband's dress shirt? So what? Nobody'd give a guy like him their right number. Besides...
Dearie, why don't you let Mrs. Carstairs have a word?
Huh? Why, sure. Have a word, Carsty. Have two. They're small.
My trouble is this, Mrs. McGee. It is imperative that I be in Florida next Monday for my niece's wedding. Are you familiar with Pensacola?
Yes, and I like it, too. Though I just as soon have root beer.
No, Molly. She says Pensacola. That's a town in South Carolina.
Florida.
Oh, what'd I say? South Carolina? It's a town in Florida. When do you leave, Carsty?
That is the crux of the whole matter, Mr. McGee. I can't leave because I find it impossible to get a train reservation. My secretary's on her vacation, and Mr. Carstairs is out of the city. I'm almost desperate enough to what does one call it? Weigh my thumb?
No, thumb your way, dear.
Yes, though I shudder at the very picture of a Carstairs sitting on a suitcase at the side of the road.
Oh, I don't know, Carsty. You'd be surprised how much abuse a well-made suitcase can take. So don't you worry about it. I'll get you on a train. I'll get you a double compartment with hot and cold running brakemen. Old Atchison. Yes, sir. Old Atchison, Topeka, and San Paz McGee. That's me.
You might just as well go home and start packing, Mrs. Carstairs. And you might as well throw in some fishing tackle, too.
Fishing tackle?
Yes, I wouldn't put it past him to route you by way of Nova Scotia.
Never mind what way I route her. I'll get her to Pennsylvania before she can...
Pensacola, Mr. McGee. Yeah. Please call me the moment you have my reservation. And if a man answers, don't hang up. It'll be I, me, hoarse with excitement. Good day, and thank you so much.
Well, shall I run upstairs and get you your wool muffler?
What do I need my wool muffler for?
You've stuck your neck out so far, I don't want you to catch
cold. Hand me the phone. Hello, operator. Give me the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe.
McGee, did you have any luck?
Wait a minute, Molly. I'm talking on the phone. Now, look, Mac, here's my problem. I got to get a friend of mine's wife on the Rattler to Pensacola, see? Yeah, it's a matter of life and death. If I don't do it, she'll kill me. Now, wait a minute, Mac. This is a... Yeah, but I've got a... But Mac, I... Hello? Hello? Disconnected.
Who's Mac? General MacArthur?
Oh. Friend of mine named McNally. Used to sing baritone in the old Winter Garden Four. Great pal of mine, Fred Nittany.
Who?
Fred Nittany. He's a guy from Starved Rock, Illinois, that he and I used to have a vaudeville act together. You know, singing and dancing and witty sayings.
Yeah.
Never forget one time we played a split week in Boise, Idaho, in Frankfort, Kentucky. It was...
How could you play a split week in places? How could you play a split week in places so far apart?
Fred went to Boise and I went to Frankfort. I used to sing smart, sophisticated songs like, if I gotta drink champagne from her slipper, I gotta get a gal with smaller feet. Music, boys. All special material like that.
What's all this got to do with getting Mrs. Carstairs a train reservation?
Well, this McNally I was talking to, he used to play snooker with a guy named Charlie Bonfield, see?
Yeah.
And this Bonfield married a gal who used to be private secretary to a guy by who was a cousin of Hap Vanderveen who went to school with Gordy Bestel.
Yeah.
And Bestel is the barber that cuts the hair of P. Morton Billing, the president of the PSNR Railroad. You see how it pays to have connections?
No.
Me either. Bonfield moved to Michigan, and Vanderveen is in the South Pacific. Bestel won the Irish sweepstakes in 1937 and lives in Bermuda. And Brilling hasn't been president of the railroad for 16 years. But I'll find somebody, by George. I still got connections. I got an inn at the City Hall, don't forget that.
Have you tried calling the president of the railroad?
Several times. I can't get to him. His smart aleck secretary keeps cutting me off. Even after I tell her who I am, she cuts me off.
You don't mean even, you mean especially. Are you sure you weren't cut off accidentally?
Sure, I'm sure. Look, I'll show you. Hello, operator. Give me Whistle Vista 1234524. Yeah. Now, the president's office, please. Hello. This is Mr. McGee speaking. A very close friend of Mr. What's the president's name again? Huh? Rudolph? Rudolph what? Oh. Well, I'm a very close friend of Rudy's, and I wanted to speak to him about a reservation. Oh, hello? Hello? See, she does that every time.
Well, who else have you called?
My gosh, everybody I could think of. Last hour, I've talked to a state representative, the Brotherhood of Pullman Porters, the Interstate Commerce Commission, and a guy named Godfrey P. Dugmore.
Who's Godfrey P. Dugmore?
I don't know. I got him on the wrong number. Very interesting chap. Said he was the first guy to go over Niagara Falls in a wardrobe trunk.
My goodness.
Yep. Said as soon as he gets out of the hospital, he's going to try it again without drawers. In the trunk, I mean.
Well, looks like you'd better get to Mary LaTrivia, dearie. Time's a-wasting. Come in. Well, for goodness sakes, Dr. Gamble, how are you, Doctor?
Hello, Molly. Hello, potholder.
Hi, Aerosmith. You're just the guy I wanted to see.
Okay, Toadface. Stick out your tongue and say ah.
I'm all right. Who do you know on the railroad racket, Doc?
Well, the chairman of the board of the Wistful Vista and Eastern has been under my care for 7 years.
Heavenly days. What's he got, Doctor?
3 railroads, a castle in Scotland, a 400-foot yacht, 2 ex-wives, arteriosclerosis, and a tendency to pinch waitresses.
Well, look, kid. Give him a buzz on the Amici here and see if he can swing me a good reservation on the train to Pensacola.
No.
Why not, Doctor?
Because he spends his afternoons on the golf course and, if interrupted, would fly into a rage, which would raise his blood pressure. And he's already so red in the face, he looks like an Indian, and strangely enough, he is. What time is it?
3:40, 3:41, Doc. Why, you gotta go?
Yes. Yes, McGee, I've gotta go. Gotta be in my office at 4 o'clock to extract a dog's tooth.
Oh. Heavenly days, isn't that a job?
Is that a job for a veterinarian, Doc?
No, it isn't. I have to extract this dog's tooth from a mail carrier's derriere. See you later.
Hey, what's a derriere?
Well, it's a French word, dearie, meaning the back of the lap.
Doggone it if that secretary of the office of that president that road won't go. Hey, I got an idea. Hand me the phone.
Here.
Thanks. Hello, operator. Give me Wistful Vista, 1234524.
Howdy, ma'am. This is Wild Bill Hornaday talking. Wild Bill Hornaday from Wyoming, ma'am. President of the Tonto Cattlemen's Association.
Well, yippee my old kaye, a paw in the character.
Look, ma'am, I shipped a heap of beef critters on your railroad, and I'd like to ask you a trifling favor. I gotta get me to Pensacola, Florida, and if you can rope me a reservation, I... Hello? Hello? Chuck Small, she cut the wire on me.
Can't understand it, Paul. You were sure mighty convincing. I could almost hear them mavericks bawling down there in the Silkwood.
Cottonwood, Small.
Excuse me, I forgot the place was kind of run down. Now, look, McGee, the time is getting short. You better call the city hall and get Mary LaTrivia to help you with Mrs. Carstairs' reservation.
Well, I hate to do it till I have to. My gosh, there must be somebody I know that's...
Hello, Molly. Hiya, pal.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junie. Look, kid, you know anybody connected with the TS&R Railroad?
The TS&R? What railroad is that?
The Tallahassee, Saskatchewan, and Richmond. The TS&R.
Otherwise known as the Two Streaks of Rust.
Oh, the Tallahassee, Saskatchewan, and Richmond.
Yeah.
Sure, I know the purchasing agent very well. He buys Johnson's wax from me by the carload.
Splendid.
Here's the phone, Junior. Tell him that I
want... The job he's got, of course, he realizes how Johnson's wax preserves and protects their equipment.
Oh, that.
Brings out the natural beauty of the wood in their club cars and helps to keep their dining cars spotless and gleaming.
Of course it does that, but...
He wouldn't think of using anything else to protect the leather upholstery from dirt and dust and dampness.
Yeah, but what's that got to
keep the picture frames and lampshades clean and new looking.
Yeah, we know all that, Junior, but...
No railroader who's ever seen what Johnson's wax can do to beautify the interiors of his lounge cars and Pullmans would ever think of using anything else.
Look, Waxy,
Pardon me?
About Carstairs' reservation.
Who?
Mrs. Carstairs, Mr. Wilcox. McGee promised to get her on a train to Pensacola.
Oh, yes, you're sending Carstairs to Pensacola.
That's right.
I think it's a marvelous idea. Best of luck, pal. Let me know how you come out. Bye now.
Oh, dear. That boy.
I don't like to say this, Daddy, but aren't your connections coming a bit loose? The influential people you've contacted so far couldn't give you standing room in a gondola.
Well, doggone it, I must know somebody around here that'll be useful. If that secretary in the president's office wasn't so dad-ratted snippy, Hey, let me try her again. Hand me the phone.
Here.
Thanks. Hello, operator. No, Mert, not now. No, I haven't got time. Give me Whistle Vista, 1234524. Yeah.
Wild Bill Hornaday rides again.
Well.
Hello? Mr. Gumshoe Long, Chinese ambassador speaking. Thank you very much, Ikashi, number one reservation on Lalo train to Pensacola, Chop Chop. Hello? Hello?
That's luck anyway.
Well, you know what Confucius say. Man who make big bluff apt to fall over it in dark.
She's got no business cutting me off. If she realized who she was talking to...
Oh, hello, Alice. Come in, dear.
Hi, Alice.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Mr. McGee.
Aren't you a little late for work today, Alice?
Oh, this is my day off, Mrs. McGee.
How is the new job, Alice? You're working at the Bonton now, aren't you?
Yes, at the perfume counter, Mr. McGee, and it's perfectly fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Did you know we have some perfumes down there that sell for about $75 an ounce?
Mm. You really pay through the nose for those, don't you?
One woman opened the bottle to sniff it and asked me if she could have just a dollar's worth. And before I could say no, she'd had it.
Hey, is it true that a lot of men are beginning to use fancy-smelling toilet water and stuff like that there, Alice?
Oh, yes, Mr. McGee. But we call those items by very masculine names, so men won't mind asking for them.
Oh.
You ought to try Souvenir de Sawmill, or a bottle of locker room essence, or maybe some of our cologne de caboose.
Hey, speaking of cabooses, Alice, you happen to know anybody down at the railroad station?
Oh, creepers, yes, Mr. McGee. My cousin Marjorie. You've heard me mention her.
Oh, yes, I have.
Great, great. What does she do, Alice? Has she been there long?
Oh, yes, she's been there for simply ages and ages.
Well, at last we're getting somewhere.
Yeah, whose office is she in? The president's?
Oh, she's not in any office, Mr. McGee. Huh? She's waiting to get on a train.
What?
Sure, I take her sandwiches every day.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Look, McGee, why don't you give it up? After all, you don't have to get Mrs. Carstairs a train reservation.
No, I don't have to. But won't I look like a mug if I fall down on the job? I had to flap my big fat lips about what a big shot I was. Knew all the right people, friends every place, and what happens? Looks like I couldn't influence a 90-point Marine to accept his discharge papers.
You know, that girl at the office of the president of the railroad, you know, if there was some way you could avoid using the word Pensacola... That's what tips it off that it's you every time.
Hey, I'll bet you're right. That's what gives me away.
Sure.
Hand me that telephone again.
Here.
Thanks. Hello, operator. I want... Huh? No, Mert. Please, not now. No. Give me Whistle Vista, 1234524. Yeah.
Old Paul Muni McGee, the man of 1,000 voices.
Evening, ma'am. This here's Colonel Beauregard speaking. Colonel Beauregard, ma'am. From Mount Julep, North Carolina. Yes, ma'am. That's about halfway between here and hello. Why, little Yankee whippersnapper.
Well, that ought about end your impersonations for the day, dear.
Read it anyway.
Even Mason and Dixon had to draw the line someplace.
What them railroads need is a lesson in courtesy. That's what they need is a lesson in. If I ever get to own a railroad...
Own one? My dear boy, you can't even get a friend a ride on one.
I'm beginning to feel a little cheap, too. Here I go blowing around about knowing people in the right places, and I can't...
Come in. Well, for goodness sakes, Mayor Latrivia, this is quite an honor, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Molly. Hello, McGee.
Hi, Politico. Say, you're just the guy I wanted to see. Now, I don't want to ask you for any favors for myself, you understand, Mayor, but...
That, in my experience, is approach number two. Number one is, I want a favor. Number two is, I want a favor for a friend. Number three is, I want to do you a favor, Mr. Mayor. Number three is the one that is always loaded. Anytime anyone does a politician a favor, there are enough strings to it to equip the violin section of the Boston Symphony.
This is a very simple thing, Latrivia. You can do this with one eye tied behind you.
He wants you to use your influence with the railroad, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
Oh. Whom do you wish me to corrupt in what railroad, McGee?
The TSNR, Latrivia. Tallahassee, Saskatchewan, and Richmond. All we want is a decent reservation to Pensacola, Florida. That ain't so tough, is it?
Oh, not at all, my boy. When I finish that little task, I shall be happy to bake you a lemon meringue cake in the shape of the Taj Mahal. Then let you and I put on our bathing suits and climb Mount Everest. Who do you think I am, the Wizard of Oz?
Well, is it so difficult to get train reservations, Mr. Mayor? I mean, I know it is for common people like us, but after all, an important man like you
can't
should...
swing it, eh, Latrivia?
As it happens, my friends, the president of the TSNR is a fellow club member of mine.
Oh, fine.
We play chess together twice a week.
Oh, McGee used to play chess too, didn't you, dear?
Yeah, I used to be a marvel at it, Latrivia. One night I played 27 opponents while blindfolded.
You don't say.
Mm-hmm.
How many games did you win?
He didn't win any. He stumbled over a chair and knocked himself out for 3 hours.
That's in the past. You say you're a pal of the railroad, Prexy, eh, Latrivia?
Yes. He was asking me just this afternoon if I could use my influence to get him a set of automobile tires.
And did you?
I did not. I wouldn't use my influence to get anyone enough rubber to erase a comma from a petition to remove me from office.
What did he need a set of tires for, Mr. Mayor?
He wants to drive to Florida, Mrs. McGee.
Drive to Florida? Why don't he take one of his own trains?
This is the point at which I was trying to arrive.
Huh?
He can't get a reservation. I hope that answered your inquiry. Good day.
Oh. He didn't need to do that to me. Here I voted for that guy every time. Sometimes twice at a time. How does he show his gratitude? This is a fine state of... Oh, my gosh. How am I ever going to tell Mr. Carstairs?
Have you exhausted every single angle, dearie?
Yes, my... For that guy every time. Sometimes twice at a time. Myself, too. My gosh, I'd have swore... Excuse me. I mean, I was sure I knew somebody that could swing it for me. But no. I guess I'm just a flop. A failure. Just a big windbag that never...
McGee, I have an idea. Hand me the phone.
No, it's no use. I've tried all the dialects.
Hand me the phone, please, dearie.
Okay, here.
Thank you. Hello, operator. Give me the Union Station, please.
You get no place that way.
Hello, ticket office. What have you on the TSNR for Pensacola tomorrow night? Drawing room B in car 172.
Huh?
Well, please reserve it in the name of Millicent Carstairs. Thank you. Goodbye.
Well, I'll be... A drawing room! Well, what do you know about that? By George, I knew somebody that could swing it. Hand me that phone and I'll tell old Lady Carstairs. I'll show her who has influence in this town.
You're simply wonderful, dearie.
Oh, it's nothing that any red-blooded American boy couldn't have done. Just gotta use your head, that's all. Hello, operator? No, not now, Mert, not now. Give me the residence of Mrs. Carstairs on the corner.
In the coming year, Fibber McGee and Molly will most certainly be making many new friends. Friends who perhaps will be using Johnson's Glow Coat on their floors and linoleum for the first time. Well, now any one of our many old friends could tell these ladies what a pleasing experience they have in store. With self-polishing Glow Coat, you can give your floors and linoleum the gleaming luster of a wax finish with practically no work at all. Glow Coat needs no rubbing or buffing. It's self-polishing. You simply apply and let dry. In 20 minutes, come back and you'll find even old linoleum gleaming with a brand new beauty. It's amazing the difference it makes. And of course, because Glow Coat protects the surface from wear, new linoleum stays like new, both in bright appearance and in the way it wears. Yes, our new friends have a pleasant surprise coming when they first use Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat.
What did Mrs. Carstairs say when you told her you had a reservation for her, McGee?
She said skip it. Said she changed her mind. Said she wasn't going.
Well, my goodness, after all the trouble you went to, what did you say?
Oh, I said that was perfectly okay. Then I asked her if she was going to be here 2 weeks from Wednesday.
What difference does that make? 2 weeks from Wednesday is Halloween.
Nasty laugh. Yeah. Good night.
Good night, Al.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax for Home and Industry, inviting you all to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, it's the new gay family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Brought to you by the Jell-O family of desserts.
J-E-L-L. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tapioca puddings. Yes, sirree.
And now Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it.
If you were a little bird looking down the main street of the town where Liz Cooper lives, you'd see a strange sight right about now. Cars are pulling out of the way. Pedestrians are scurrying to the curb. Dogs and small children are cowering against the buildings. For coming down the street is an automobile with Liz Cooper at the wheel. She signals for a left turn and goes straight ahead. Now she's making another signal. I don't know what that means. Oh, she's waving at George, who's waiting in front of the bank. Now she pulls over to the curb and comes to a gentle stop.
Oh, hi, George. I'm here.
So I see.
Say, I didn't do a bad parking job, did I?
No, only two wheels are up on the sidewalk.
Well, come on, we're late and it's my fault. Get in.
I can't.
Why not?
The front wheel is on my foot.
Oh. It is not. Now, come on. I'm sorry I'm late, dear. Were you waiting long?
No, just a few hours.
Oh, you're so funny.
Liz, what was the idea of signaling a left turn and then going straight?
Well, I was going around the block, so I'd be headed the right way, but I changed my mind.
You should have a special signal of your own, which means, as you were, I changed my mind. Why can't you make a decision and stick to it, Liz?
I do.
Oh, sure. I'll bet I know why you were late. You couldn't decide which dress to put on.
No, Smarty. I put on the first dress I took out of the closet.
Well, then why were you late?
I didn't like the way it looked, so I changed it.
Oh, Liz, I don't think you've ever gone through with anything you've started. Why do you change your mind so much? I don't.
There's a perfectly logical explanation. I'm a woman and you're a man.
Well, what's the difference?
Now, let's not fight, George. Where are we meeting the Atterburys for dinner?
The green room.
We can't go to the green room.
Why not?
I'm wearing my blue dress. I'll clash.
We're going there. They're waiting for us.
Well, I don't want to go there. What stoop decided on the green room anyway?
You did.
Oh.
Oh, we're in luck. There's a parking space. You can pull in right there.
Okay. Oh, there's a closer one up the street. I'll go over there.
This is where I came in. Take this one, Liz. Finish one thing you start.
George, this one up here is much closer to... Oh, it's a fire plug.
No.
Well, I'll back up and take that first one. Oh, look, someone's sneaking into that place. I saw it first.
Liz, will you please make up your mind and do something with the car?
Okay, dear.
Now, why are you getting out?
Well, I just made up my mind what to do with the car. I'm going to let you park it.
I hope they're not angry about waiting. Hiya, folks.
Hello, Liz. Hello, George, boy.
George. Hello, Liz girl. Well, I'm sorry we're late. Well, let's get some menus in order. I wonder what's good.
Try the roast beef. It was delicious.
You've eaten already? No, he's fooling. Ha ha, Rudolph. Now shut up.
I'm hungry.
Well, let's get a waiter. Here comes one. May we have a, oh, well, here's another one. Waiter, are you Well, I'll get this one.
I'll lay 3-1.
Waiter, if you don't mind, we'd like some,
Reminds me of an inscription I once saw on a waiter's tombstone. It said, St. Peter finally caught his eye.
Well, here's a waiter I won't miss. Waiter.
Yes?
We'd like some menus.
Well, let go of my tails and I'll get you some. I'll be right back.
Oh, look. Some people are leaving that table by the window. If we move over there, we can have a view while we're eating.
Remember what I told you, Liz. This table is fine.
Oh, come on, George. You'd like to move, wouldn't you, Iris?
Well,
I'd like to, wouldn't you, Mr. Atterbury?
Well,
see, George, it's 3-1.
But our stuff is already here.
Well, we'll take it with us. Iris, you carry the butter plate. Mr. Atterbury, the napkins. Yeah? George, here, you take the water glasses, and I'll carry the silver. Hurry up. Someone else is heading for it.
Yeah, I'll go.
All right. Ah, good. We beat them. Everybody pass the things around now.
Here's a plate of water, Iris. Hand me a glass of butter.
Has everyone everything they need?
Yes, I have 3 knives.
I beat you. I have a full house. 3 forks and a pair of spoons.
You'd better call the waiter. He's looking under the other table for us.
Ollie, Ollie, auction free.
Waiter, dear, here we are.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, we'll order over here.
Hey, sorry, this isn't my table.
Oh, come on, wait on us.
All right, here's the menus.
Let's see. Oh, everything looks so good. I'll have the,
Sorry, we're all out of...
Very amusing. I'll have the roast beef.
Yeah, 1 roast beef.
What would you like, Iris?
I think I'll try the lamb chop.
Yeah, 1 lamb chop.
George, what looks good to you?
Lamb chops, huh? Oh, that sounds good. And they're not fattening either. Waiter, change mine to lamb chops, please.
Yes, ma'am. 2 lamb chops.
That's 2 for each of us.
Yes, ma'am.
And I don't want too much fat on them, but I like them thick.
Hey, would you like me to trot the lamb by? You can pick out the chops you want.
Well.
Liz, don't make a scene.
Well, go ahead, George. You order.
I'd like the sirloin steak.
Yes, sir. 1 sirloin steak. How would you like it?
Rare and thick and juicy.
Right. And you, sir?
Well, I think I'll have a
Gee, George, you made that steak sound so tasty. And...
Yeah, how would you like it, madam? Well, medium or rare?
Rare.
I'd like the pork chop.
Yes, sir. Now, what would you like to drink? Order last.
Coffee.
Coffee for me, too.
Milk.
And what would you like, madam?
Pork chops, huh?
Oh, no.
Would it be too much trouble to change my order?
Why, no. Whatever gave you that idea?
Well, I think I'd like pork chops.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, why don't you write it down?
I wrote it down for you when he ordered it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, let's see if I've got this straight. Lamb chops for you, a steak for you, pork chops for you, and a new eraser for me.
You know, with all this talk about pork chops, they sound sort of...
Now, you keep quiet, Iris. We've
We've had enough changing of mind.
Yeah, I'll get the appetizers while you fight it out.
What's the matter with you, Liz?
Well, I couldn't help it, George. Everything everyone else ordered sounded so just ginger peachy.
Fine thing. Everyone's staring at us.
Who is?
That couple right there.
The ones eating fried chicken?
Yes.
My, doesn't that chicken look good? I think I'll...
You wouldn't dare.
Now, forget it.
Oh, who wants pork chops?
You'll eat them if I have to give them to you intravenously.
Some fun. Go out to dinner and can't even choose what you want to eat. I think it's a...
Bless you. What's the matter? You catching cold?
Yes, there's a draft here from this window.
Oh, well, here, change seats with me.
No, that won't do any good. There's an empty table over behind those potted plants.
Stand by for another troop movement.
Sit down, Liz. We're staying here.
I'm afraid we're making a scene.
Do you want me to catch my death of cold, George? I'm not staying at this table.
Yeah, here we are, shrimp. Don't
stand up,
please.
You hit the waiter.
Now, aren't you ashamed of yourself sneaking up behind me and hitting me with a tray?
I've never been so humiliated in my life. The Atterburys probably won't ever go to dinner with us again.
I'm sorry, George. I guess it was my fault. Everybody seems to think so.
Poor Mr. Atterbury, with shrimp cocktails all over him.
He sure looks silly.
Well, you didn't help any trying to pull that shrimp off his face.
Well, how'd I know it was his nose? Put cocktail sauce on your nose and see what it looks like.
All right, all right.
His nose looks like a shrimp without cocktail sauce.
Liz, this has been a very tiring evening. Now, let's go to bed.
All right.
Well, what are you standing there looking in the mirror for?
I can't make up my mind if I should put my hair up tonight or not.
That does it!
Well, George, why are you looking at me like that?
I can't make up my mind whether to spank you on my right knee or my left knee.
Spank me?
Liz, I'm sick of this inability of yours to make up your mind. Now, why are you so wishy-washy?
I can't help it. My father was a wishy and my mother was a washy.
No mood for jokes.
I can see that.
Whoever started this idea that women have a special privilege of changing their minds?
Don't look at me. I didn't do it.
Well, I don't go for it. And as far as I'm concerned, from now on, you're the same as a man.
I am?
Yes. Now, what have you got to say about that?
Let's go down to the club and have a steam.
Now, I mean as far as making decisions and getting things finished is concerned. Starting right now, when you decide to do something, you're going to do it and not change your mind.
Yes, George.
And once you start anything, you're going to finish it. Understand?
Yes, George. Oh, I just love you when you're so dominating.
No, never mind.
I give you my solemn promise, George, and I'm going to begin right now finishing what I started. Kiss me.
Now, what for?
I started to kiss you this morning. The telephone rang.
Okay.
Oh, George, you're so right about this whole thing. Come on, let's finish that again.
Mrs. Cooper, you've been flying around here all morning. What in the world are you doing?
Katie, last night I went to the George Cooper Finishing School.
Huh?
I promised George that from now on I'd finish everything I started. I'm even going back and finish all the things I ever left undone.
This I gotta see.
Katie, when you hear what I'm going to do now, you'll drop dead.
What?
I'm going to clean out the hall desk. Oh, get up, Katie. Come on, I've threatened to clean out that desk for years. You can help me.
I'm not touching that desk till you spray it with DDT.
Oh, it's not that bad, Katie. You're exaggerating.
I am not. It
It's the only desk I've ever seen where the pigeonholes have pigeons in them. Come on, let's go. We'll open the middle drawer.
Oh, it's stuck.
I don't wonder. It's a cram full of junk.
Well, help me pull it open and then jump out of the way. One, two, three. Not as bad as I thought.
How long has it been since you cleaned it out?
Well, not too long. There's a newspaper on top of the pile. Let's see what it says. McKinley assassinated. Oh, I remember. Iris Atterbury gave me this paper. It has a recipe on the back.
Well, where'll we start?
Well, first, let's get rid of these bundles of... Oh, Katie, look what I found. Our love letters. Oh?
Oh, now, Mrs. Cooper, don't start reading those now. Oh, Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, that George.
Let's get started with the...
Oh, I called him my little cupcake.
That's nice. Now,
he called me his cream puff. He said he liked the way my crust was filled.
Please, let's get this desk done.
Wait a minute. Listen to this letter. George, when you read this, I will be far away. I am going home to Mother.
Now, there's a real love letter.
Oh, I know what this is. I wrote it after our first quarrel. Listen, I never want to see you again, you big,
Well, don't stop now.
That's all there is. I didn't finish it.
Well, why not?
Oh, just as I was writing it, I got a wire from George saying he'd gone home to his mother.
Did you ever get back together again?
Katie, gee, just think how different things might have been if I'd finished this letter and sent it to George. Hey, wait a minute.
What's that gleam in your eye for?
Well, I promised George I'd finish everything I ever started, and I started this letter and it isn't finished. Now, I'll mail it special delivery so he'll get it this afternoon.
How do you think Mr. Cooper will react when he thinks you're leaving him?
I know exactly how. He'll come rushing home and beg me to stay. He'll think I found out something he's done.
Well, suppose he hasn't done anything.
Katie, when a man's wife is leaving, he doesn't say, did I do something she found out about? He says, which one did she find out about? Just wait till this letter's delivered and watch Georgie come marching home on his knees.
Bullseye! Well, George, boy, that's the last game of dots we have time for. Have to do some bank business, you know.
You know, it was a wonderful idea of yours to put this dart game in the recreation room, Mr. Atterbury.
Oh, thank you. Now, take the pinpoints out of the dots and put them back on the counters.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness, look at the time. Almost the end of the day.
That's right. 2:45.
Pardon me, Mr. Cooper. Here's some mail for you. I thought you'd want it.
Thanks.
I thought you'd want it.
Thanks again.
What was that?
That's my new secretary. She's so new, I haven't even found out her name yet.
Yeah, well, wait till she lights someplace, then ask her.
Well, let's see what this important mail is.
Why, Cooper boy, that letter's perfumed. Oh, you devil, you. Who's it from?
Yeah, I'm darned if I know. Listen, dear sister, 2 weeks from now, we're holding our annual powwow at Old State U. Won't you be there to greet your sisters of dear old Delta Upsilon Delta? What the heck is that?
Don't you know, sister?
No wonder it's addressed to Mrs. George Cooper, care of me.
Well, I wondered how long you've been powwowing with the girl.
Delta Upsilon Delta, D-U-D. Oh, that's Liz's sorority. Doesn't Iris belong to the same one?
Yes, she's a dud, too. Iris got her invitation yesterday.
Look, tonight, why don't we talk our wives into going? It'll do them good to get away from us for a week.
Good idea. We'll insist that they go. Well, boy, it's almost quitting time. Let's go out the back way. I don't want the employees to see me leaving early.
Oh, Mr. Cooper, here's another letter that just came for you. Special delivery. Mr. Cooper? Oh, I guess they're gone.
I guess you'll tell him what's in it when he gets home. I'll give it to him tomorrow then.
I can hardly wait for George to get home.
Liz Cooper, you didn't really send that letter to him, did you, girl?
I certainly did, and I'm going to have plenty of fun with him before I break down and tell him the truth.
This is exciting.
Oh, here they come. I'll bet he's terribly upset.
Oh, no.
He doesn't sound too upset. Well, he's probably hysterical. Watch what he says when he comes in.
Hi, Liz. What's for dinner?
Well, that's it, George. Keep up a front. Hide the grief that's in your heart.
What are you talking about?
It smells good, whatever it is.
Go ahead, George. You can speak in front of the Atterburys.
You lost me someplace, Liz. Come again.
Did you get a letter at the bank today?
Oh, your letter.
Yes, my letter.
I'm glad you reminded me. I forgot all about it.
Well, thanks a lot. Weren't you a little surprised when you opened it?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was. I couldn't figure it out at first.
It sure sounded funny when you read it to me.
George Cooper, you didn't read my letter to Mr. Atterbury.
Well, sure, why not? Oh, well, let's talk about it after dinner. It's not important.
Not important? We'll talk about it right now. What do you have to say about it?
Well, I think you ought to go.
You think I ought to go?
Well, sure. Oh, don't worry about me. I'll get along fine. I don't know why you're crying. It'll be wonderful for both of us.
George Cooper, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
You keep out of this, Iris. This is their affair.
Rudolph Atterbury, I think you even agree with that heel.
I do.
What?
As a matter of fact, since Liz is going, I think you should go, too.
Come on, Iris. We can take a hint. Let's go.
Gee, Mr. Atterbury, I had no idea this meant so much to the girls.
Those sororities really get a hold on them, don't they?
Well, we can't sit here all night, Iris. They close the green room at midnight.
You know, I've been thinking, Liz. I'm happy. And you should be. We're free.
Yeah, we're free.
No more bothersome husbands.
No more bothersome husbands.
No more smelly pipes and awful cigars.
No more wonderful pipes and lovely cigars.
No more cold feet in the middle of our bed.
This is the happiest day of my life.
Oh, we gotta stop crying. My mascara running.
Yes, your face looks like it's behind bars. Do you want to blow or mop?
Mop.
Well, here's one dry corner left.
Thanks.
Iris!
Oh, George!
You two scatterbrains, you ran away for nothing.
We did?
Yes. Katie told us about the letter you wrote. He never got it. We were talking about your sorority reunion. The announcement came to the bank in care of me.
Oh, George, I'm so happy.
Me too.
Well, let's all stay stay here and have dinner. It'll be a celebration.
Okay. Waiter, dear.
Oh, there you are. I've been looking for you. Now, which one wanted the lamb chop?
You have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Scott Rorick. Tonight's program was produced and directed by Jess Oppenheimer, who wrote the script with Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. Original music was composed by Marlon Skiles and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The part of Katie the Maid was played by Ruth Parrott. Lucille Ball will soon be seen in the Paramount picture Sorrowful Jones. Be sure to listen to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband next week. Bob Lamon speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, many schools hold various popularity polls from time to time, and Madison High School, where Our Miss Brooks teaches English, is no exception.
No, and I felt extremely honored last week because I had been voted faculty queen of the football team. Although I can't help thinking that they could have dreamed up a more glamorous title for me than Miss Pigskin of 1950. Anyway, Friday morning, Walter Denton picked me up in his broken-down, hopped-up jalopy, or, as the girls call it, the devil's playground, to drive me down to dear old Madison, or, as I call it, the devil's playground. Well, Walter, you seem quite chipper this morning.
I'm more than chipper. I'm a bird on the wing. My spirits are soaring like an eagle in the blue.
Well, I don't like to bring you down, but you just flew through a red light. What's the cause of this pre-dawn gaiety?
Our football team, Miss Brooks. Wait till you see them in action. We're going to amaze the entire gridiron world this year.
I thought we amazed the gridiron world last year, Walter. As I recall, in the 15 games we played, we had a perfect record, unblemished by a single victory.
Well, you see, it's coaching that makes a difference. And this year, things are going to be a lot different. We got Bronco.
You mean we're going to buck our players into the end?
No, ma'am. I mean Bronco Dawson. He's one of the greatest ex-players alive. Huh. With him coaching Madison, we're a cinch.
Seems to me I have read his name somewhere. Wasn't he voted a pure American or something?
Well, that's all American. And he made it for 3 years, too.
Well, I hope he does well for our team. If only for Mr. Boynton's sake. It's amazing how the success or failure of our football team affects his spirits.
What's amazing about it? Mr. Boynton's always been a fan. And just because he's a little on the square side, maybe, doesn't mean that, well, underneath he isn't regular.
Is that what you really think of Mr. Boynton, Walter?
Sure. What if he is a cornball on the surface? Down below, he's pure gold. You just gotta dig a little.
Frankly, my shovel is bent by now. I mean, he is a fine teacher, Walter.
Sure he is. He may not be much of a spender, but he sure likes to celebrate when the team does okay.
You're right about that. At the risk of sounding like an elephant, I remember a game that they did win. It was 3 years ago, and after it we went out to dinner, and then a show, and then to a cafe to dance.
Sounds terrific.
Oh, it was. Mr. Boynton was like a man in a dream. In fact, it wasn't until 2 days later that he realized we didn't go Dutch.
Well, don't worry. Old Bronco will add to your store of happy memories this season, Miss Brooks. Especially with Stretch Snodgrass in the backfield. Oh, what an athlete that kid is. He's got a great pair of legs, a great pair of arms, and a real head on his shoulders.
That's the best kind. Well, we could only get something into that head.
Oh, I know Stretch isn't any Einstein in the classroom, but on that field, he's a genius. And he's sure crazy about Bronco. Yeah, especially after what happened yesterday. Did you hear about it?
Well, I...
The Stretch was pushing a wheelbarrow full of football equipment across the field, see? When three hoodlums sneaked up on him.
Yes, I...
And while two of them held Stretch down, the other guy made off with the stuff. Well, Bronco came along about then. He saw what was going on, and boy, did he light into those two guys.
Yes, I heard about it.
Well, then, why did you make me repeat the whole thing?
I like adventure stories.
Oh, what an athlete that Bronco is. Used to be heavyweight boxing champion of the Navy, you know. Yeah, he was telling Mr. Boynton the other day he's going to give him some tips on the manly art of self-defense.
He better not. Mr. Boynton's defense is tough enough as it is.
Well, here's a dear old school. Say, there's Stretch locking up his bike. Hi, Stretch, old pal.
Hello, Walter. Hello, Miss Brooks.
Good morning, Stretch.
No, ma'am.
Walter and I were just... What do you mean, no, ma'am?
It's not a good morning. Not only is it not a good morning, it's a rotten morning.
What's wrong?
Well, I got a good mind to quit this old school. That's what I got a good mind to quit.
Quit? But you can't do that, Stretch. Not after all the time you've put in.
Walter's right, Stretch. One more year and you're eligible for a pension.
This ain't no time to be whimsical, Miss Brooks.
I'm not being whimsical, Stretch. I'm just trying to be realistic.
Well, I thought we was going to have a swell football team this year because we had old Bronco Dawson coaching us. But now we ain't.
We ain't?
We haven't.
That's right, we ain't.
Why ain't we?
Mr. Conklin seen him fighting those roughnecks on the school grounds yesterday without giving him any chance to explain, snitched to the Board of Education and had him fired.
But we gotta do something. That's not fair.
Are you sure you've got the facts straight, Stretch? Did Mr. Conklin just arbitrarily dismiss Bronco?
Exactly. He just artibellary canned him. Some of the guys in the team are so sore, they're talking about not showing up for practice after school.
Oh, but they shouldn't do that. They need the practice.
Well, that's what I said. I told them they'd just be spiting their own noses.
Spiting their own noses?
Sure. There must be some other way to get Bronco back.
Wait a minute. I've got an idea. Miss Brooks, who was just voted queen of football at Madison?
I was.
Correct. Now, who is the logical candidate to step into Mr. Conklin's office and demand Bronco's reinstatement?
Would you repeat the question, please?
Walter's right, Miss Brooks. You gotta talk to Mr. Conklin.
Oh, but boys, I don't carry any weight.
Well, your build is just as good
That's
as...
That's not... I just don't get along with Mr. Conklin.
Oh, you've gotta do it, Miss Brooks. And think of Mr. Boynton. You said yourself Mr. Boynton's a new man when the team's going good.
Well, he is, but I
can see it all now. Bronco puts a winning team on the field. You and Mr. Boynton watch their glorious victory. Mr. Boynton takes you out to dinner. And then to a movie. And after that, you go to a nightclub and you dance. The music is soft and dreamy. And as Mr. Boynton holds you in his arms, the air is charged with excitement. He holds you tighter and tighter. And as you glide over the smooth floor with your face pressed close to his, your ecstasy knows no bounds. You're filled with a delicious sense of well-being. You're no longer hungry for romance, starved for affection. Well, Miss Brooks?
Don't wrap those words up. I'll eat them right here.
I, Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment. But first, here is Vern Smith. Reader's Digest reports the results of one of the most extensive experiments in dentifrice history. Yes, Reader's Digest reports the very same research which proves brushing teeth right after eating with Colgate Dental Cream stops tooth decay best. And here are additional important facts. Over a 2-year period, the Colgate way stopped more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. Yes, the Colgate way of brushing teeth right after eating stopped tooth decay best. Better than any other home method of oral hygiene. Even more important, there were no new cavities whatever for more than 1 out of 3 who used Colgate's as directed.
No other dentifrice, ammoniated or not, has proof of such results. The best results ever reported for a dentifrice of any type. And you should know that Colgate Dental Cream, while not mentioned by name, was the only toothpaste used in the research reported in July Reader's Digest. Yes, Colgate Dental Cream, and only Colgate Dental Cream, was used in this research. So always use Colgate's to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And when you follow the Colgate way, Colgate Dental Cream stops tooth decay best.
Well, Walter and Stretch convinced me that without Bronco Dawson, Madison couldn't have a winning football team. And I knew that without a winning football team, I couldn't have a winning evening with Mr. Boynton. So I let them aim me in the direction of Mr. Conklin's office and wish me good luck.
Do the best you can, Miss Brooks. Remember, we're rooting for you.
We sure are, Miss Brooks. Please try your uttermost to get old Bronco reinstated.
I'll do whatever I can, Stretch. See you later, boy. Don't be late for your classes now.
So long, Miss Brooks. Now there goes a great gal. I only hope Mr. Conklin's in his pleasant mood.
Which one is that?
When he doesn't bite you on sight.
Don't worry about his being too rough on anybody today, Walter. I think I softened him up for a while when I done what I done this morning. He's probably scared stiff.
Stretch, what did you do?
I thought I'd make him sweat a little on account of what he'd done to Bronco. So I phoned him up and put a handkerchief over the mouthpiece to disguise my voice.
What did you say to him?
Well, I just said, "Hiya, Mr. Conklin, this is Bronco Dawson. I'm coming to school today and beat your big fat head in."
Miss Brooks.
Oh, hello, Harriet. I was just going to drop into your dad's office. Is he busy, do you know?
I don't think so, but he's awfully nervous. Every time he hears a sound, he practically jumps under his desk. And he's had the custodian put a big lock and chain on his door.
Sounds like he's expecting me.
Maybe you can find out what's bothering him. He wouldn't tell me a thing.
All right, Harriet, I'll see you in class.
Bye.
Ah! Who goes there?
It's a friend, Miss Brooks.
Are you alone, Miss Brooks?
Yes, sir, I am.
One moment, please. I'll let you in.
Good morning, Miss
Brooks. Get in quickly!
Do I get any time off for good behavior?
Somehow your devastating bon mots just don't tweak me this morning. Now, get to the point. What do you want of me?
Oh, nothing for myself, Mr. Conklin. I wanted to talk to you about somebody else.
Who?
Bronco Dawson.
Yes! That bully?
Oh, but he isn't, Mr. Conklin. He hasn't had a fair chance to explain.
Fair chance? Do you realize that since he heard that I recommended his dismissal to the board, he has threatened me with bodily harm?
Bronco threatened you?
On the telephone. In Dawson's own words, Miss Brooks, he is coming to school today to beat my big fat head in.
Oh, that's ridiculous, Mr. Conklin. He wouldn't dare to beat your big fat head in.
My big fat what?
He wouldn't beat in your big fat anything. I'm a little confused, sir, but actually your head is neither big nor fat.
Well, thank you.
It's just pleasingly plump.
You have made me very happy, my dear. Now get out.
Sir, you've just got to listen to reason. Bronco was only fighting to protect school property from some hoodlums. Stretch Snodgrass told me so himself.
A cock and bull story born of hero worship.
Oh, but Mr. Conklin,
the case is closed. In a few days, the board will provide us with a new coach.
I wish you'd reconsider this matter, Mr. Conklin. It means a great deal, not only to me, but to the entire student Boynton. A student body. You see, the team has just voted me faculty queen.
Congratulations, Your Majesty. Now, with your permission, I'd like to back away from the royal presence. I've got things to do.
Yes, sir.
Oh, one moment. Just before you came in, the custodian told me that some of the players he spoke with are planning to cut football practice after school today.
Yes, I know, but that can all be changed.
I think so, too. And since you're so popular with the boys, it seems entirely possible that you could have a hand in changing it.
What are you getting at, Mr. Conklin?
I have another crown for your head, Queenie. You are hereby appointed temporary football coach.
Oh, but Mr. Conklin, there's no need for that if you'll only give Bronco a chance to explain. The mere fact that he was an All-American fullback and heavyweight champion of the Navy is no reason for you to be afraid of him.
Afraid of him? Who said I was afraid of him? Osgood Conklin fears no man. You forget, Miss Brooks, that you are speaking to the former captain of the Rutgers tug-of-war team. For 3 years, I was anchorman on that team. Atlas, they used to call me. No matter how tenacious our adversary, I could always be depended upon to see... Heavyweight champion of the Navy! Oh!
It's just the phone. You can come out from under the desk, Atlas.
Oh, yes, the phone. One moment, please. This may be another threatening call from Bronco, Miss Brooks. I'll have to ask you to wait in the hall.
But, Mr. Conklin...
If I lose my temper with him, I may forget to use the King's English. Come, I'll let you out.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Zimmerman's Butcher Shop.
Quit your clowning, Osgood Conklin. This is Mrs. Davis.
Who?
Margaret Davis, Miss Brooks' landlady.
Oh, well, Margaret, I'm very happy to hear from you. Very happy indeed.
Well, you may not be so happy when I tell you why I called. Your wife just dropped over and told me that you had poor Bronco Dawson fired.
Well, what has that got to do
with... You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Bronco was the best football coach that Madison ever had.
Now, please, Margaret, my actions in this matter were completely justified. I simply had to do
something. If I were a man, I'd come over there and beat your big fat head in.
Now, see here, Margaret. Bronco Dawson engaged in a common brawl on my campus yesterday. He's nothing but a ruffian.
He's a perfect gentleman. I happened to witness part of that encounter, and the moment Bronco saw me, he stopped hitting those bullies.
What?
That's how much of a gentleman he is. He told me himself he would never hit anyone in the presence of a woman.
He wouldn't? Well, perhaps we'd better discuss this another time, Margaret.
I'll talk to you later.
I've been suddenly taken busy. Good day.
Come in, Miss Brooks.
I don't want to seem insistent, Mr. Conklin,
but... Come in, you wonderful woman, you.
Sit down, my dear. Take my chair. I'll squat on the floor. Go on. Sit in that swivel chair. Lean back on it. Take a nap, if you like.
A nap? You mean I'm awake now? Oh, there's the bell, Mr. Conklin. I've got a class starting.
You mean we've got a class, Miss Brooks? I have long been of the opinion that a man in my position should occasionally refurbish his education. And where can I better acquire additional knowledge than by kneeling at the feet of wisdom? Your feet, Miss Brooks.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have shined my shoes. Backfield men, take a few turns on those parallel bars.
I've got the lineman working on the heavy weights, Miss Brooks.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Boynton. It was very nice of you to offer your assistance this afternoon. I don't know much about football.
Oh, that's all right, Miss Brooks. Of course, I can't help feeling that Mr. Conklin should never have let Bronco Dawson go. If it's not too late, I'd like to talk to him about it. Do you know where I could find Mr. Conklin now, Miss Brooks?
Probably in the bottom drawer of his desk. He's afraid that Bronco's going to beat him up for getting him fired.
Oh, but that's absurd. Bronco's a very peaceful sort of chap. You know, I got to know him pretty well in recent days. He told me he liked everything about Madison, even Mr. Conklin. In fact, he was planning on bringing his wife here from Millsboro.
I didn't know Bronco was married. He never mentioned having a wife.
Yeah, I know. He's an odd one when it comes to women.
He's an odd one.
By that, I meant he keeps his private life pretty much to himself. He sort of confided in me, though. Even told me he had a baby a couple of years ago. Never mentioned it to his soul.
Must have been quite a surprise to his wife. I guess it's too late to do anything about Bronco now. He hasn't even come back to school for his uniform.
Pardon me, Miss Brooks. We got the blackboard all set up for skull practice.
Good. Get the skulls together and we'll practice.
Well, where's the board set up, Walter?
Right near the tackling pit. Of course, those hoodlums stole our tackling dummy yesterday, so I had to borrow a big laundry bag from the cafeteria. I told Kenny Patterson to get it stuffed with sawdust or something. I hope he didn't forget.
Hey, get a load of me, folks. I borrowed Bronco Dawson's uniform for today. It's the old number 99 he wore in college.
Oh, good old 99. And that yellow jersey is hot stuff, all right.
Well, how do you like him, Miss Brooks?
Now I know how mustard looks when it's happy. But Stretch, where's your own uniform?
Well, that showed up missing. One of those hoods glommed on it yesterday while Bronco was clobbering the other two.
How does that go again?
I'll translate, Mr. Boynton. Stretch means his uniform was pilfered by one brigand while our football coach was taking punitive measures against his confederates.
How does that go again?
Well, we better get going. I want to see if that laundry sack has been stuffed.
In honor of me having old Bronco's uniform on, Miss Brooks, don't you think I ought to get the first shot at tackle practice?
Well, don't look at me, Stretch. You'll have to settle for the sack.
Hi, Daddy. What are you doing on the athletic field?
I was on my way home, Harriet. Left the building through the side entrance today.
But why, Daddy?
Just for kicks.
You know, for a minute I thought you might be looking for old 99. I was hoping you might have changed your mind about letting him go.
Old 99?
Yes. That's what a lot of the kids call Bronco Dawson. Those are the numerals he wore on his college uniform. He's kept them to this day.
I hope I've seen the last of Bronco Dawson and his numerals.
I'm afraid you're not going to get your hope, Daddy. It looks like old 99 is coming out of the gym now.
Where? Oh, there. Oh, dear.
I'd like to stay and watch some practice, but I've got a date with Susie Prentice at 3:15, and I... Oh, golly, I'm late. See you later, Daddy. I've got to run.
You've got to run? Oh, no. No, I'd better not. He'd nail me in a minute on this open field. I've got to hide. Ah, this laundry bag. I'll just hop in here and pull the string. Champion of the Navy yet.
Tackle practice.
Give me a hand with this dummy, will you, folks?
All right, Walter.
I'll help, too.
I'm glad Kenny didn't forget to stuff it.
From the way it feels, it must have stuffed it with blubber.
Well, we'll just hoist it up between these uprights.
Yep.
Now, remember, fellas, hit it low and hit it hard.
Come on, Stretch. You start it off.
Okay, here goes.
That's a pretty nice tackle, Stretch, but a little too low.
What do you mean, too low, Mr. Boynton? I thought I hit it just right.
Why don't you show him what you mean, Mr. Boynton?
Me? But I haven't played football in years.
Oh, go ahead, Mr. Boynton. With your physique, you'll grind that old sack into powder.
Well, I'll try it if you want me to. I'll get a good running start.
Now, Stretch, Mr. Boynton can probably teach you plenty, so stop that groaning.
Who, me?
Oh, wonderful, Mr. Boynton. But why so hard? You knocked the wind out of yourself.
No, I didn't. I feel great.
Gosh, look at that sack. It's all lopsided.
Well, there's only one way to fix that. Hit it from both sides at once.
That's right. It's often necessary for two men to bring down the ball carrier. Now, Stretch, you hit him high and I'll hit him low.
Right, Mr. Boynton. This time I'll make that old sack holler uncle.
Uncle?
Say something, Stretch?
No, sir. Didn't you say something?
No. Walter, was that you?
Not me. Was it you, Miss Brooks?
It wasn't me.
Isn't anyone going to ask me?
The sack. It talked.
Boy, it sounds like Mr. Conklin's in there.
Oh, heavens. Quick, release those pulleys. I'll get the drawstrings. Oh, it is, Mr. Conklin.
Yes, Miss Brooks, it is. And I blame you for this entire outrage.
Me? But
you knew I was threatened by Bronco Dawson. You knew I was trying to hide from him. And what more logical place for me to hide than here in this laundry bag?
But that's not fair, Mr. Conklin.
You should have known I was in there when you helped hoist me up.
I'm sorry, Mr. Conklin. I have an ironclad alibi.
An alibi?
Yes, sir. Just take a look at the size of that bag.
What has that got to do with it?
I couldn't possibly think that even you were that big a dummy.
Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight? Yes, tonight. Show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a luster cream shampoo. Luster cream, world's finest shampoo. No other shampoo in the world gives you Kay Dumit's magic blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Better than a soap, better than a liquid... Luster Cream is a dainty cream shampoo. Leaves hair three ways lovelier. Fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen. Soft, manageable. Even in hardest water, Luster Cream lathers instantly. No special rinse needed after a Luster Cream shampoo. So gentle, Luster Cream is wonderful even for children's hair. Tonight? Yes, tonight, try Luster Cream shampoo.
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl. You owe your charming glory to a luster cream shampoo.
And now once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, by dint of some fast talking, I convinced Mr. Conklin that I wasn't the one responsible for his bruised condition. Of course, Walter, Stretch, and the rest of the team showed amazing loyalty. As soon as the bag was opened, they ran giggling into the hills. Then Mr. Boynton went to the gym for some iodine, and I tried to soothe Mr. Conklin. He certainly was banged up. There was a big lump here, a small lump there, here a lump, there a lump, everywhere. Osgood Conklin was a mess. E-I-E-I.
Miss Brooks. Do you know what I'll do if I ever get my hands on that Bronco Dawson?
Yes, sir. You'll hold his arms. Now lie still, Mr. Conklin.
Hi, Miss Brooks. Why is Daddy stretched out on... Daddy, when did it happen?
Take it easy, Harriet. Your daddy's been helping the football team.
But the way he looks...
He's worried, Harriet. He's a little concerned over Bronco's possible reaction to being fired.
But Bronco doesn't even know he's been fired.
What's that?
The board wasn't to notify him until this morning, and he left town last night. I just stopped home for a minute, Daddy, and found this wire for you.
Oh, let me see that. Where are my glasses? Oh, they were in my vest pocket. You read it, Miss Brooks.
All right. Dear Mr. Conklin, called home to Millsboro last night. Wife presented me with 7-pound fullback. Have taken job coaching Millsboro High. Know you'll understand. Thanks for everything, Bronco Dawson. Well, all's well that ends well.
Ends well? I'm nothing but a mass of welts and bruises.
But you're just thinking of yourself, Mr. Conklin. What about poor Bronco?
Poor Bronco?
Yes. Now he'll never get a chance to beat your big fat head in.
Welcome to another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Luster Cream Shampoo, for soft, glamorous, caressable hair, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis and Joe Quillen, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, and Leonard Smith.
You want a beauty soap for a beauty bath.
And your bath becomes a beauty bath when you change to proper cleansing with Palmolive soap.
For bathing with this beauty soap brings you the full, beautifying effects of Palmolive's mild and gentle lather, proved by doctors to bring most women lovelier complexions in just 14 days.
Bath-size Palmolive is designed to give you everything you need for all-over beauty care. Fragrance for daintiness, mildness for loveliness. Purity for gentleness. Big bath size for thriftiness.
So get big bath size Palmolive. So mild, so pure, so right for all of you.
If you like mysteries that are as full of chuckles as chills, be sure to hear Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday over the same network. Don't miss the exciting and laughable adventures of these amateur detectives. Hear Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday night. And be with us again next week at the same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
And now, The Halls of Ivy. Again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. For many families, breakfast is a small pandemonium, filled with a clatter of cups, a confusion of tongues, desperate last gulps of scorching coffee, and a mad dash for the bus station. But for Dr. William Todhunter Hall, president of Ivy, and his wife, Victoria, it's usually an unruffled few moments put aside for their private lives. This morning, for instance, Victoria is arranging a bowl of flowers on the table, while Dr. Hall is thoughtfully staring at a highly polished spoon.
There. Now. Nothing like a few well-rained What's the plural of ranunculus, Toddy?
Oh, you could express it in three different ways. One, Latin, ranunculi. Two, English, ranunculuses. Three, idiomatic. Some of these pretty whatchamacallits.
Oh, I'll take the idiotic way. But they do make a pretty blink, don't they?
They do indeed. Yes, they start the morning off very well. But it is the picture of Victoria, well and beautifully arranged in the opposite chair, which sustains me for the rest of the day.
Oh, darling, I do feel lovely and conceited. And at breakfast, too.
Where my emotions about you are concerned, the time of day is unimportant. My heart ticks away, but it strikes no hours. Besides, I've never subscribed to the popular belief, originated by some sour cynic and perpetuated by comic strip artists, that the breakfast table is necessarily a battleground, strewn with bad manners and resounding with the clash of personalities.
And that's because you are a dear love.
As my father used to say, the world would be a happier place if people would start the day by drinking a toast to someone instead of just eating it with someone.
That's a wonderful idea, the toast. Cheers to William, the light of my life, from a woman who's extremely happy that I happen to be his wife.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, the meter and the grammar may be a little bit ragged, but the sentiment is sincere.
The meter doesn't matter as long as I did.
Did what?
Meter.
I'm glad you did, too. And not to interrupt a nice sentimental conversation, may I ask why you keep staring into that teaspoon? What's the matter with it? Do you want a clean one?
No. It's quite clean and handsomely polished. No, I was merely fascinated by the optical illusions caused by the reflections in a concave surface. In it, I am upside down. It's very refreshing.
Refreshing?
Yes. It's a matter of perspective, of course, but any device which can show things in a new light is both stimulating and therapeutic.
Oh, you mean if the world could see itself reflected in its teaspoons, it might stop waving its knives?
Something like that, yes. And then, too, there is a school of thought which believes that standing on one's head early in the morning is stimulating to the brain. It's good for...
Yeah, well, I'll toss you to see who walks to the front door on his hands. Have you got a quarter?
No. No, so I'll volunteer.
Yeah, well, if it's a salesman working his way through college, tell him so are we.
Well, Professor Warren, it's good to see you. Come in, come in.
Well, I know it's an unholy hour to call, Doc, but I'm on a tight schedule today. Morning, Mrs. Hall.
Well, hello, stranger. Come in and join us for a cup of coffee.
All right, Mrs. Hall, but only 4 teaspoons full. And pull down the shades. I've already had my allowance this morning. That housekeeper of mine counts every sip I swallow. I think she's in the secret service of my insurance company.
And how is the faithful Miss Burgess?
Minding my business as usual. How are you nice people?
Much better now that our favorite history professor has finally decided to pay us a visit. Here's your coffee.
Oh, a full cup. Thanks for contributing to my delinquency. I never realized how much I missed you two. Since I've been fighting with the publishers of that nauseating monstrosity of mine, which appeared under the revolting pen name of Llewellyn Lafayette. Now they want me to answer all his fan mail. Gee.
Oh, but I understood you had become reconciled to your triumph as a popular novelist.
Oh, yes, but who am I kidding? I'm a glorious failure, wallowing in a disgusting success.
Ah, and you love it, and it obviously agrees with you, too.
Yeah. Now, tell us, Professor, how was your lecture tour this summer?
Well, Doc, after autographing the umpteenth thousandth copy of The Heart of Passion, I kidded myself into believing that the honking gander that was old Professor Warren had suddenly become the singing swan that is Llewellyn Lafayette. Say, Mrs. Hall, before I forget what I really came for, have you got a lace tablecloth I can borrow?
A lace tablecloth? Why, well, of course, and you're more than welcome to it.
And maybe 4 fancy napkins? I know I'm more the arsenic than the old lace type. But, frankly, I didn't know where else to go on such short notice.
Well, I'm glad you came to us, but you sound so desperate about it.
Yes, are you testing out a new washing powder to win a prize? You know, I like Quincy's Rinsies because, in 25 words or less.
No, it's nothing as easy as that. I'm giving an unexpected dinner tomorrow night, and I need you two even more than your tablecloth.
Oh, that's an irresistible invitation, Professor. Thank you.
Well, about 7, black tie, if I can find mine. Well, so long, folks. I got to meet a plane.
Goodbye,
bye.
Professor.
Well, how about that new pinstripe suit and the flower in his buttonhole?
Yeah.
And the haircut. You don't suppose he's beginning to believe his own publicity, do you?
Well, something's happened. I'm familiar with his contempt for convention, but this anxiety of his about a lace tablecloth is... it's a new and baffling facet of his character.
Yeah, and he was so anxious about it, he forgot to take it with him. I have finally met an absent-minded professor.
And this dinner seems to be an affair of state.
Yeah.
Vicky, I wonder if it could be his publisher who is coming.
Yeah, well, absent-minded professor regains memory. You get the door tidy, I'll get the tablecloth.
Ah, your tablecloth, I presume, Professor.
Yep, guess I left my head at home this morning. Doc, I used to think I remembered everything. Now I realize I just ignored everything I forgot.
Yes, man doesn't realize how much he is indebted to his subconscious. He can do something without knowing why, and then find several splendid reasons for having done it. It may account for many of history's heroes.
Here you are, Professor, and the napkin.
Thanks, Mrs. Hall. It's not going to be a party, mind you. In fact, just you two and, Fern.
Fern?
Mrs. Winthrop.
Mrs. Winthrop? Have we met her?
No, I was going to keep her a secret until the psychological moment, but I guess I better prepare you for the shock. Don't ask me how it happened, but I've got me a lady friend.
Why, that's wonderful, Professor Warren.
I wouldn't call it shocking, but it is a delightful surprise. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. In a way, you might say it was a forgotten moment in my past that caught up with me in, of all places, Salina, Kansas. I was there on my lecture tour. Fern's quite the literary light out there, you know. President of the Byron Society, no less. A widow.
Well, this is the time to go widow shopping just before Christmas.
Charming woman. seems to grasp things. Insight, sympathy, genuine enthusiasm. Never known a woman quite like Fern. Which could be explained by the fact that I've never known very many women. Oh, but Fern. Wait till you see her.
We'll be looking forward to meeting her.
Is she staying here in Ivy Long?
Huh? Oh, yes. She's visiting with relatives, and I persuaded her to stop over at Ivy and see our campus, and...
And?
What? What'd you say?
Well, would you like me to wrap up the tablecloth and napkins?
Oh, no, I haven't time, Mrs. Hall. If any of the nosy neighbors see me, I'll just tell them I've started to take in washing. Wouldn't startle them half as much as the truth.
Go on, Professor. Well,
Mrs. Winthrop explains everything.
Yes. This would be the place to say, well, what do you know? If either one of us ever said, well, what do you know?
Yeah.
Which neither one of us would be caught dead saying. Which is the first time I ever said caught dead.
Don't worry. Your secret is safe with me. Yeah.
I suppose I'm slightly staggered by the news that the last of the incorrigible bachelors has thrown in the sponge.
Yeah, it looks like the last of the tobacco-chewing professors is going to have to switch to bubble gum.
But Professor Warren... He was the one man who always seemed to be self-sufficient, self-reliant, a self-contained entity. Ah, Vicky, I'm afraid he's got it bad.
Well, if your it refers to what I think it refers to, and you got it bad enough, it isn't bad. It's good.
Presentation of the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. And now to return to the Halls of Ivy, where Dr. and Mrs. Hall are in Professor Warren's parlor, becoming acquainted with his lady friend, Mrs. Fern Winthrop.
Well, it's been a long time since you've been in my house, folks.
Joseph has told me so much about you two that I feel as though I've always known you.
Well, since Professor Warren always unvarnishes the truth, Mrs. Winthrop, that leaves us without a pretense to stand on.
Yeah, it puts it as a disadvantage. Told you all about us and kept you a big secret.
Well, Mrs. Hall, you know I suffer from a kind of natural shyness. Homer said diffidence, but diffidence is always used to explain someone's bad manners.
Oh, your shyness is one of your sweetest qualities, Joseph. It's what I remembered most about you.
Fern sees me through the wrong end of the telescope. It was way back, more than 40 years ago.
I was just a mere wide-eyed child. I remember it as vividly as though it were yesterday. Isn't it wonderful how fate kept us apart over the years just so we could meet again at the age of discretion? Oh, I don't believe that fate is really blind. Do you, Dr. Hall?
It may be due to my own blindness, Mrs. Winthrop, but I think that the best way to keep fate on your side is to have faith.
Oh, good, very good.
Well, fate sure lowered the boom on us tonight. Of all times, Burgess has to go visit a sick sister or something.
And now, Joseph, tell them the truth. Hmm? They might as well know that your housekeeper simply walked out on you. Mrs. Hall, you have no idea how insolent she was to him. If there's anything that I loathe, it's a woman who bullies a man. Oh, Joseph, dear, I meant the silver leaf ashtrays, not those old chipped glass things.
Couldn't find them, Fern.
Well, never mind, dear. I always say that if a man can't be the master in his own house, well, then I think... Oh, but there I go. I haven't let anyone else get a word in edgewise. When I get started on the subject of Joseph Warren, I never know when to stop.
Oh, you needn't stop, Mrs. Winthrop. He's one of our favorite subjects, too. With the added advantage that you can discuss him in mixed company.
Oh, Doc, if I'm going to be in a fishbowl, everybody else has got to dive in it with me.
Yeah, fishbowl. Well, that's it. I knew something was missing in this room. What happened to it, Professor?
Well, the fish were getting tired of looking at me anyway, so I threw them out. Along with that old leather chair of mine.
Mrs. Hall, the minute I stepped into this room, I could sense the conflict. Why, that hideous old chair quarreled with everything else in here.
Mostly me. Ferns made me realize that that chair was the story of my life. Comfortable, hide-bound, and sagging.
Yes, but I saw Joseph this summer. He kept apologizing for his age. And I said age was only a habit. Now, that chair was one of his habits. Why, Joseph has a whole new life ahead of him. And I don't just mean because of his novel. There's real poetry in Joseph.
Oh, I don't claim to be any Lord Byron, but I used to be pretty good at limericks. Wrote one about you once, Doc.
Really?
Can you remember it?
Can a mother forget her children? Certainly I remember it. Will Hall, Ph.D. and M.A., solves difficult problems each day to keep his school in the groove, which just goes to prove he's the will that proves there's a way.
Oh, very good.
Very flattering, Professor. And it's refreshing to be the subject of a limerick that can be quoted without sending the children out of the room.
I'm so glad you mentioned Byron, Joseph. I can't wait to talk to you people about him. He's my subject, you know. I can quote him for hours and hours when I get started. people must be starving. Of course, I hadn't expected to cook tonight, but when that woman left so unexpectedly...
Isn't there something I can do to help, Mrs. Winthrop?
I used to slice bread quite neatly until the bakers in a fit of jealousy started selling it already cut.
Oh, no, thank you. It's all in the oven. It'll be done in 15 minutes or so. But I do have a few canapés. Will you excuse me? Joseph.
Yes?
Would you mind helping me, dear?
Make yourself at home, folks. Coming, Fern.
I love that old leather chair, Toddy. It was the nicest thing in the whole room.
Yes, it was comfortable, wasn't it? And Burgess was a very valuable woman.
I miss the fish, too. Such good little things. They never jumped up in your lap to have their ears scratched. Oh, dear. I hope first impressions won't last.
You know, Vicky, I'm reminded of a scene in my parents' living room when I brought one of my first girls home to meet them. Of course, mind you, it never amounted to anything.
You'll have to explain, darling, at this late date.
I was both apprehensive and defensive. I so wanted my mother and father to approve.
Now, come on, what did they do?
Nothing. Very effectively and with great charm, they did nothing, and it broke the spell. I learned then that non-intervention in matters romantic is the highest form of diplomacy, and that the course of true love is not banked on the sharp turns. Mrs. Winthrop, that what was most remarkable was that despite his impatience and slovenly technique, Byron's temperament and vigor gave his verse a timbre all its own. Take the momentum of his anapests, for instance. I enter thy garden of roses. Or better still, the Assyrian came down like the wolf on the fold.
And his cohorts were gleaming in purple and gold, and the sheen of their spears was like stars on the sea. Well, bravo, Mrs. Hall. Oh, that was a lovely delivery. You should have gone on the stage.
I gave it some thought at one time. You should obey those impulses, dear. Joseph, do you remember the first time I read that poem to you?
Yep, I remember.
And best of all, of course, is the one that every woman wishes was written for her. She walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies.
And all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect. And her eyes.
Thus mellowed to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies.
Oh, what fun! you see, Joseph, this is what I meant by the companionship I said you needed.
Well, Fern, I guess I'm not as pig-headed about poetry as I used to be.
Ah, Mrs. Winthrop, you are a remarkable woman. You have accomplished the impossible. I have been able to discuss and debate a good many things with my friend here, but every time I mentioned a poet, especially one of the romantics, the wall of indifference became impenetrable.
Hey, congratulations, Professor, and welcome to our Association for Incurable Romantics.
Well, we are certainly all in tune with each other tonight, aren't we? through poetry, we are part of the larger harmonies around us. Poetry helps to brighten up the world for us, doesn't it, Dr. Hall?
Yes. Yes, a poet himself once observed that if you take an old, dull, brown penny and rub it vigorously with wet sand, the penny will come out a bright gold color, looking as clean and new as the day it was minted. Poetry has the same effect on words and our world as wet sand on pennies.
Is that this early on Sunday morning? Shall I get it, Toddy?
No, darling, you must be the paper boy, and I've the change right here.
All right.
Why, good morning, Professor Warren.
Wet sand, old dull brown pennies.
Oh, come in, come in.
I don't want to be brightened up. Well, good morning, Mrs. Hall.
Well, sit down, Professor. You look tired.
Well, I ought to be. Spent most of the night swimming the Hellespont. Somehow or other, I was Lord Byron. But I ain't Lord Byron, so I turned back. And then I got stuck in miles and miles of wet sand. And I woke up and it was 3 a.m. and I couldn't get back to sleep. So I came over to tell you folks that I woke up.
Yeah. Well, good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Yes.
I want to know one thing, Doc. Are you trying to marry me off to that wet sand?
Oh, I'll have to parry that question with another professor. Why do you assume that I should be trying to marry you off to anybody?
Doc, what happened to me? Does the brain really soften when the arteries start to harden? I guess if I had any blood left in me, I'd be blushing with shame.
Well, what for?
The only thing worth blushing for. Sheer stupidity. For not recognizing that the spots in front of my eyes were just plain dust without any stars in them. And for leading on a kind and pleasant woman. I can only redeem myself now by saving her from an unhappy life. With me.
Mrs. Winthrop seemed to be extremely happy with you last night.
Not when I took my charm off.
What did you do?
I just stopped being Llewellyn Lafayette and became Joe Warren again. First, I told her what I thought of Byron. It was plenty, but not enough. Then I told her I wanted my bad habits back. My old leather chair, for one, and my fish. But what really threw her was when I took out my plug of chewing tobacco. You see, I got honest again, Doc. You folks know that I'm a pretty cranky old man when I'm a true self.
Oh, we don't know anything of the kind, frankly. I agree with what Mrs. Winthrop said about you.
What?
Well, you do have poetry in you. How you express it is another matter. But I've learned that if one looks over the wall, however high and insurmountable it may seem, one will always find the garden in the heart of any man.
Well, maybe, Doc. We don't all grow roses, do we? Maybe some of us just have a small backyard with one shade tree and have grown so used to it alone that we don't know how to share it anymore. Well, so long, folks.
Goodbye, Professor.
Goodbye, Professor. And we're glad you're back.
Thanks. So maybe you two didn't have anything to do with saving me and Fern from a fate worse than. But I want to thank you anyway, because I think maybe you did. And to quote Byron for the last time, maybe I am ashes where I once was fire. But when you get along toward winter, there's nothing like ashes to keep you from slipping.
Darling, your policy of non-intervention seems to have been a diplomatic triumph.
Yes. Yes, I've always believed that the unknown sculptor of the Venus de Milo deliberately left it incomplete.
Why?
To show the world that the goddess of love recommended a hands-off policy.
It might also show why Cupid never wears any clothes. Love should have nothing up its sleeve.
Starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Colman. Professor Warren is played by Arthur Q. Bryan, and Fern Winthrop was Sarah Selby. Tonight's script was written by Barbara Milton Merlin and Don Quinn. Music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. Secret word tonight is door. D-O-O-R.
Really?
You bet your life. The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
It's a fine name for a grown man. Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx. Well, last week we dropped $3,500, so tonight we start fresh with $1,000 for one of our couples. George Fenneman, who gets first whack at it?
Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a bachelor and a spinster, and here they are, Mr. Maurice Hauenstein
And Miss Irene Tom, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if one of you says the secret word at any time, he wins $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Bachelor and a spinster, eh? Miss Tom? Tom?
How do you...
Tom?
Tom.
The H is silent, eh?
That's right.
Like in herring. Eh? Mm-hmm. What kind of work do you do, Miss Tom?
I handle the retirement records and special pension files for General Petroleum Corporation.
And Mr. Havenstein?
That's right. Is that right? The name is Hauenstein. H-A-U.
Isn't there a cow that has that kind of a name?
Close to it.
What kind of work do you do, Mr. Havenstein?
Well, I am office manager for the Owens, Illinois Glass Company.
Mm-hmm. Why aren't you married, Mr. Havenstein?
Well, I think I'm pretty old now.
I don't know. Look at Barkley. Look at Mayor O'Dwyer. Look at Hedy Lamarr. That's Hedy. You look at O'Dwyer, and I'll look at Hedy Lamarr. How old are you, Maurice?
44 now.
Well, that's a wonderful age for marriage, isn't it, Irene?
Well, I think it is.
Just about right, huh? Just right, too, I'd say now. Maurice, how tall are you?
About 5'8".
And how tall is your ideal man, Irene?
Oh, about 5'7", 5'8".
I bet if Maurice was a midget, your ideal man would be about 3'6". Has dodging women ever led you into any peculiar experience, Maurice?
Well, only one that I can think of.
Well, that's the one we want. Well, let's have this yarn, Maurice.
I don't know how fitting it is, but here in Los Angeles, I took a young lady up to the apartment of a boyfriend of mine, and no one was home.
Well, so far, you're okay, huh?
I couldn't get in, but I knew how to get in because he'd always lose his key, so we would push the garbage can aside and enter.
You had the
from...
garbage can in the living room?
When you were out in the hall, you could enter through the garbage entrance to get in to unlock the front door.
Well, that's the wealthiest garbage you'll ever encounter. You just said door, and that's our secret word tonight, so you just won $100 in cash. Compliments of the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. Do you remember what we were talking about when the bell rang?
After I'd gotten inside, I had to go around to unlock the front door. I didn't know that the boyfriend had moved out about three weeks before.
Well, whose garbage was it?
When I got inside, there was a man and his wife in bed. I was pretty dumbfounded, and then I suddenly noticed he was getting out of bed in no uncertain terms. And of course, the front.
What do you mean in no uncertain terms?
I could see blood in his eye or something. He was after me. The front door was right handy there, but I didn't go out the front door. I went back out this garbage hole.
Well, that's certainly a very romantic interlude in your life. Now, as a confirmed bachelor, Maurice, who cooks your meals and rinses the gravy out of your neckties?
Almost anyone that's around.
Irene, are you a pretty good cook?
Well, I think I am.
What kind of a dish do you like to whip up? Anything in particular?
Well, I like fried chicken, but then, of course, I do have a recipe that I'm rather proud of that I like to serve to my friends called Rinkum Diddy.
Rinkum Diddy, did you say? Maurice, do you like Rinkum Diddy? You've never heard of Rinkum Diddy? Maurice, you've certainly led a sheltered and cloistered life. Irene, you're not trying to poison Maurice. No. What is Rinkum Diddy?
Well, it's really a Welsh rarebit.
Maurice, you obviously need a good woman to look after you. If Irene proposed to you right now, what would your answer be? Would it be no?
Yes.
Well, you've changed your mind, eh, Irene? Here he is, struggling but still alive, huh? Well, congratulations to you two. I know you'll be very happy. And remember, Maurice, the secret word tonight is rinkum diddy. Say you make a charming and attractive couple, and apparently you have a great deal in common. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to work together for a chance at $1,000. You bet your life.
The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America have certain standards which they do their utmost to live up to. You might call this set of standards their creed. It means a lot to them, and to you as a car owner. This creed states that every DeSoto Plymouth dealer wants to and intends to treat you fairly and squarely, whether you come in for a new car, a used car, or just a simple repair job. It's the honest desire of everyone in the office and in the shop at your DeSoto Plymouth dealers to serve you to the best of his or her ability. Isn't this the kind of attention you want? Well then, wherever you drive, visit the DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Now let's see if an ex-bachelor and an ex-spinster will be the ones who get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question. Fenneman, bring them up to date on the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,000 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's going on out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You select the cities and states as your category. Is that right? All of these cities are over 50,000 in population. Now, here's your first question. You have $20. How much are you going to try?
$10.
$10? Okay. Now, in what state is the city of Providence?
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island is right.
And they're on their way with $30, Groucho.
All right. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 are you going to try?
10 more.
In what state is the city of Jacksonville?
Florida.
Florida is right.
They're climbing. They have $40 now.
Now, here's your third question. How much of the 40 will you bet?
$20.
In what state is the city of Patterson?
New Jersey.
New Jersey is correct.
They're really on their way. They have $60.
Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 60 will you bet?
$30.
$30. In what state is the city of Sioux City?
Iowa.
Iowa is right.
And they wind up with $90.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealer. Stick around now. You may get a chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still door.
I know that, George.
Well, perhaps the next couple will say it, too. We have a butler, Groucho, and a housewife selected from the studio audience just before we went on the air. And here they are, Mrs. Irene Colt and Mr. Urbano Galindanis. Meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, folks, to You Bet Your Life. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you see every day. A housewife and a butler, huh? Mrs. Butler, you're the housewife?
No, I'm Mrs. Colt.
What sort of work do you do?
I'm just a homemaker.
You do
housewife.
Nothing, eh?
Nothing. Nothing? What do you mean, nothing?
And Mr. Galindanis, is that right?
That's right, sir.
You must be the butler, huh? Where are you from?
From the Philippines, sir.
The Philippines, huh? Well, what do you do as a butler? Just what do you do?
See that the house runs smoothly. And,
house runs smoothly? You work in a trailer? What was the best job you had as a butler, Mr. Galindanis?
I worked for a millionaire.
Oh, a millionaire? What was their name?
Oh, I would rather not say. That would embarrass him.
Well, could you give me their phone number? No, they might be looking for a gardener. I know I'm looking for a gardener. He stole my last bag of fertilizer.
Long distance, sir.
Tell me about their house. How many rooms?
Oh, they had 17 rooms in the house.
70 rooms?
17.
17 rooms, huh? And how many servants, huh?
14 servants.
14 servants, huh? What were their jobs, sir?
Oh, butler, second butler, chambermaid, upstairs maid, downstairs maid, cook, chef cook, second cook.
What does the second cook do? Succotash?
He cooks all the food.
Now, Mr. Galindanis, in your job with a big household, what's the first thing you do in the morning?
Get up from bed, sir.
let's say you're up now. I mean, what's the way? What's the first thing you do?
First thing to do is to see that the breakfast is served. The maids carry the trays to the ladies, and I, the butler, carry the food to the gentlemen, to the boss.
You got the wrong job, haven't you? Can't you have a switch with the maids?
Never, sir.
Now, Irene, can you have breakfast in bed if you want it?
I could if I went out and cooked it and took it back to bed.
You wouldn't have to do that, Irene. At night, all you got to do is fill your hot water bag with coffee. Huh? And in the morning, you can fry your eggs on the electric blanket. What else do you do on your job, Urbano? Do you help the master with his clothes?
Well, when he has no valet, sir, then I take care of that.
Let's say this fellow's a pauper who can't afford a valet. Now, what about the lady of the house? Who helps her with her dressing?
Oh, upstairs maid, sir.
How do you know you were asking? Do you have an upstairs maid, Irene?
I don't even have an upstairs.
I had an upstairs maid once, but she gave me a lot of trouble. She wouldn't stay upstairs. Well, Mr. Gallandinus, if taxes get any higher, my advice to you is to stop being a butler and become a tax collector. Now, you're going to work together as a team for a chance at $1,000. You run your 20 bucks into more than our other couples, and you'll get a crack at the DeSoto Plymouth big question. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but George Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The Bachelor and the Spinster won $90.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected famous women athletes as your category. All right, now you have $20. How much are you going to try?
$10.
With what sport do you associate Babe Didrikson?
Golf.
Well, Golf is right. Yes.
And they're on their way with $30.
All right, remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the $30 will you try?
$20.
What sport is Mildred Burke famous in? B-U-R-K-E.
Mildred Burke.
I'm sorry, it's wrestling. She's the world's champion wrestler.
Mildred Burke.
We had her on this program. She threw me twice in 3 minutes.
They now have $10.
Well, now you have $10, and here's your third question. How much of the 10 are you going to bet?
Shoot the works?
Yeah.
$5.
$5, all right. How much are you going to bet, huh? You want to compromise and make it $8?
Okay.
$8? Here's your third question. With what sport is Louise Brough associated? B-R-O-U-G-H.
Tennis.
Tennis is correct.
On the way again, I believe they have $18.
All right. Oh, what a mathematical genius that Fenneman is, huh? You've got $18. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 18 are you going to throw?
Send it on. 15.
Okay. With what sport is Shirley Mae France associated?
Swimming
is correct.
And they wind up with $33.
You wind up with $33. Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, in just a minute, our last couple will be out here, and then we'll all get the chance at the $1,000. Fenneman, who's leading?
The Bachelor and the Spinster are leading with $90. And the secret word is still door. Perhaps the next couple will say it. We invited some tourist experts to the show tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Josette Frontin from the French consulate and Mr. Al Kostler, who drives a sightseeing bus. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Miss Josette Frontin, is that right? Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Not very correctly. It is Frontin.
Is Frontin?
Yes.
Oh. You're from the French consulate?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
Parlez-vous français? Speak French, huh?
Yes, I speak French.
Bon appétit.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
You are welcome.
I think this girl's a phony, huh? She hasn't said one word of French. Mademoiselle Odie Cologne. That means I'll pay for the perfume later. Let's see you knock off some French.
Oh, bien sûr que je parle français. J'arrive juste de France, et c'est juste un petit peu pour vous entendre.
I knew you were French. Yeah. I know lots of French phrases. Ile de France, that means I'm sick of my friends. Chateaubriand, that means my hat's on fire. Where are you from, Josette?
Oh, I am from Dina in Brittany.
You're from Dina?
Yes.
What time did you have that, huh?
Oh.
I'm from Hunger. Is that anything like
that? No.
It?
That's not
Where is Dina?
It is in Brittany by the seaside.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Who are you, Mr. Coswell?
I'm a sightseeing bus driver.
Oh. You speak English?
Yes, sir.
What dialect do you speak, Al? I'll call you Al.
Huh? I'm from Colorado, Grand Junction. Mm-hmm.
You speak French?
No, sir.
It's too bad. It would have been much easier if you spoke French. Then we could all three of us converse in there. In the language of diplomacy. I hope you don't mind if we speak English.
Oh, I think it would be very much better.
Oui, oui, patty for gras. What do you work for, Mr. Coslin?
The Tanner Gray Line Motor Tours.
And what are the Tanner Lines? Huh?
Well, we operate over all of Southern California, Nevada, and
who do you operate
Arizona.
Huh?
Bus sightseeing buses.
You sightseeing operate on sightseeing buses?
Yes.
What do you use, a hatchet? Or? Now, what questions do your touring passengers ask most frequently, Al? Please stop at the next filling station.
Mostly,
I want to phone my sister. What do they ask mostly, huh?
Mostly to how they can get into a movie studio and see movie stars.
What are some of the movie stars' homes that you point out, Al?
We pass Loretta Young's home and Joanne Crawford, Eddie Cantor, Jack Benny's. And,
Don't you go past my house?
We pass within about a half a block of you.
Well, if I knew when you were coming, I could walk up and meet the bus. And... Well, let's get back to you, Frenchie. What do you do at the French consulate? Are you an ambassador?
No, I'm not an ambassador. I work with a French commercial attaché.
Attaché? What is that? Is that when you stick somebody with a sword?
Oh, no, that is touché.
Touché.
Yes.
Is two attachés one touché? Say, I'm picking up quite a lot of the language. Well,
that means, that means attached.
Attached, yes. And tell me, Josette, are you attached to the attaché?
Oh, no, the attaché is attached to the French consulate.
Well, I hope they'll be very happy together. Well, are you attached to anybody, Josette?
No, I'm single.
Ooh la la! That's French, bus driver. But I think you understand what I mean. Well, how is an attractive French pastry like you are still in the bakery? Surely 50 million Frenchmen can't be wrong.
Well, there are not so many French men in United States.
Well, would you have to marry a Frenchman? Couldn't you marry one of the home guard?
Well, I think I could be interested in some American man, especially if he had some of the Frenchman qualities.
I see. Well... Ma chérie, what do you have in mind?
I would like him to be kind, thoughtful, gallant, courteous, debonair, and also what you call a good sport.
Well, what I call a good sport may not be the same as what you call it. How do you feel about American husbands, Al?
I think they're kind and gentle and big-hearted, handsome and well-heeled.
Well, Al, are you that kind of a husband?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? Don't you know what kind of a husband you are?
I'm not married.
Touché, Al. That's French, meaning I make the jokes around here. What do you find most interesting about the United States, Josette?
Oh, I think that is the fact that every people, Germans, Spaniards, English, French, just seems to be happy to live together, and just like if they were a big family. They are all American.
Well, you're very observant, Josette. Perhaps someday the whole world will see it that way, too. As secretary for the commercial attaché, just what are your duties?
My job covers a lot of territory.
You mean your boss chases you around the office? But what do you mean, Miss Frontin?
I mean I have to answer the phones and the letters, sometimes some funny ones. And also I receive the people wishing to go for a trip over to France.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to go to France, and I'm planning on going there next summer. What kind of a trip would you suggest for me?
What are you specially interested?
The same thing any other red-blooded American. The Eiffel Tower. Well, I've learned a lot about France tonight and also about bus drivers. Now, let's see if you two will win the most money and get the chance at the $1,000 question. Beat our other two couples, and that's all you have to do. I can't tell you how much they won, but George is slinking around offstage to remind our listeners.
The Bachelor and the Spinster are still leading with $90.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected stars of current movies as your category. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Now, here's your first question. You have $20. How much will you try?
Better just take $5.
$5. Who plays Samson in Samson and Delilah? No? That's a pretty easy question, though. You should have guessed it. Well, it's Victor Mature. Now you have $15. Well, all right. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight, so that's the big prize. Now, how much of the 15 will you try?
Make it 10, then.
Make it 10. All right. Who is the male star of Sands of Iwo Jima?
John Agar and John Wayne.
John Wayne is right.
Well, they're on the way now. They have $25.
All right, now you got $25. Here's your third question. How much of the 25 will you try?
10.
Who plays the title role in Thelma Jordan? Take a guess.
I don't know it.
No.
I'm sorry. It's Barbara Stanwyck. All right, now you have $15. How much are you going to bet now?
You better say 15.
You want to shoot the works?
Yeah.
Okay, 15. Who stars in the Western Montana?
Earl Flynn.
Earl Flynn is correct.
And they wind up with $30. And that means the Bachelor and the Spinster get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question. This year, the one thing all of us could count on as far as weather went was that it would be unpredictable. And of course, this is all the more reason to have our cars operating in tip-top shape. Many, many people have discovered this year that it pays to go to an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealer, whether it's an emergency or a routine checkup. For there, you get expert, courteous service at the lowest possible cost. In fact, that's a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's everyday way of doing business. Now, they're able to accomplish this because they have highly skilled mechanics in their shop. And these experts work with special factory-designed and approved tools. From the records they keep on your car, they're able to tell you, for example, when your engine is ready for a tune-up or new lubrication. They'll tell you when your tires should be rotated to add thousands of miles to their life. For the best from your car, stop in where you get the best service at an authorized DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth.
And here is the bachelor and the spinster, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question, Groucho.
All right, here we go for $1,000. Ready? I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on one single answer between you. So think carefully and please no help in the audience. Here it is. Recently, in a big shakeup of personnel, a new chief of naval operations was appointed to succeed Admiral Denfield, who is the present chief of naval operations. What is the answer you two have decided upon?
Take a guess. I don't know.
I'm sorry. It's Admiral Forrest Sherman. So that means the big question next week will be worth $1,500. Well, you lost the big money, but you won $90 in the quiz, plus $100 for saying the secret word. Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Bob Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You'll Bet Your Life, presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week, the big question will be worth $1,500.
Before winding up tonight's proceedings, I'd like to thank the radio editors of the United States and Canada for voting our show the best quiz program on the air in the annual poll conducted for Fame magazine. Well, it's almost time for Bing Crosby, so good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Here's a tip from the National Safety Council. The golden rule applies in driving, too. Drive as you would have the other fellow drive. This is George Fenneman, signing off with more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey, thank you for listening, and I hope you're able to come back next week, because without you, there wouldn't be these shows. So, thank you. Love you guys.